to The Catholic Arsonist.
Yeah. And I mean, like, there's no, if we don't get through it, we don't get through it, but.
We must get to Six Flags at least.
We gotta tell the people.
We ain't as good as we once were.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay. Fire it up.
Fire it up. We're going.
Welcome back to the Catholic Arsonist, people. Today, it's just myself and Alyssa because Shayna has jury duty. Or is at least being, what do you call it?
Facetious.
I'm sorry? You think she's lying to us?
Perhaps not. Perhaps she's telling
the truth. No, what's the word? She's being scrutinized as to whether or not she's fit for jury duty.
Okay.
So she left us, and it's a sad time. But last week, we committed to starting back after the summertime, and we had an episode with Father Yates, which I still haven't listened to. You give me a recap?
Father, he just told us about sort of his story. So we said, we just wanted to get to know him as the pastor, and he started with the fact that he's a beloved child of God, and I said, okay, this is going to work. This is good.
Just unfair.
So, and then he took us through some of his seminary formation and a little bit of the discernment leading up to that.
He said that you guys didn't even get to what you wanted to talk about last week. Or maybe what he wanted to talk about.
We wanted to ask him, like, his thoughts, his vision for the parish, and some of his things that are getting him excited or things that he sees as kind of prospects. And we sort of just made it to his ordination.
Oh my gosh. Okay. There's a lot more to unpack.
There's a lot more. We thought about making it a 4-part series.
No, actually.
Shayna mentioned it.
Speaking of 4-part series, I was reading yesterday that the rights to the Lord of the Rings has been bought by Amazon, and they're doing a 5-season thing on the Lord of the Rings. But I think it's actually even before, like, The Hobbit. I think it's in the ages before The Hobbit.
They're just going to create it, rewrite it?
Not rewrite it. They're going to use the actual stories, but they're going to, it's film. So 5 seasons of it, which I'm actually really excited about. But stories that even like 90% of Tolkien fans have never heard before.
Oh, wow. But it's not like Game of Thrones. It's not going
to
be like...
Actually, it is going to be similar to that insofar as... Like, it's just an epic, quite literally an epic adventure story. And so I think they're actually using some of the producers from Game of Thrones, people from, I think, folks who have worked on Star Wars. Different big picture things. So
Game of Thrones is a tad scandalous.
Apparently, there's not going to be... If there's nudity, it's like... To show, like, corruption and slavery and stuff like that. So there's no sexual nudity.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I think the Tolkien estate wanted to kind of protect people and keep it pure.
Good.
Keep it pure, people.
Just keeping it pure.
But we wanted to stay committed to doing a weekly podcast, even though we left you as abandoned orphans all summer long. So we're going to stick to it even without Shayna today. Mm-hmm. But we figured, well... You missed us all summer, so you missed the highlights, and that's what Alyssa and I are going to go over. And I told Alyssa this morning, and then she's like, well, where do we begin? I said, we begin where things ended.
Oh, no.
Which is May 20th, rewind, whoop. May 20th was a Thursday. It was Father Martin's day off. And what was it? That morning, I had celebrated Mass, and I was going to go pray my holy hour after Mass, and he stopped me and said, hey, I want to meet with you later. Sit down and talk. It'll take 10 or 15 minutes. And I had a few things going on my calendar, and I'm like, well, I can't really make it happen. And he's like, it's like 10 or 15 minutes. Like, I just need to talk to you. Okay. And then I'm racking.
Thinking you're in trouble.
I'm racking my brain. I go to pray. I'm racking my brain. I'm like, what did I do? And I'm thinking, I had taught in the school the day before. I'm like, surely I would have said, like, did I step out of line? You know, what? So anyway, I'm sitting there praying. Have I told you this?
No.
I'm sitting there praying. And after the initial like schoolboy feels like he's getting like called out for something, like, okay, I didn't do anything wrong. Like, so it has to be on his end. It's like, okay, it's that time of year. I'm like, is he getting a new assignment? Is he getting moved? And then it hit me like right between my eyeballs. I realized he's the one who was chosen to be the vicar for strategic planning. And so time comes. He's nervous. I'm nervous. We sit down. He goes, do you know why we're talking today? And I said, you were chosen to be the vicar for strategic planning. He says, yeah. And I said words that I can't say here. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So he and I, it wasn't 10 or 15 minutes. It ended up being like 45 minutes. I had a lot of questions. He probably even more questions. But it was also there that he told me that Father Anthony Yates was going to be our pastor, which, for as disappointed I was that Father Martin was leaving, I was also encouraged by that because, as many people know, Father Yates has been the pastor at St. Francis of Assisi, which is my home parish. Ever since like my sophomore year of college, I've been very close with Father Yates. We talk regularly. He's been incredibly supportive of my vocation over the years. I've seen the ways he brought St. Francis like from kind of a place of spiritual dearth to like a place that I think is teeming with life. And he's just been a great mentor to me over the years. So I was like, okay, so Father Yates is coming. It softened the blow a little bit, but it was like, we got a lot to get through. So then I guess the next day he had scheduled a meeting with the parish staff. And maybe this is where Alyssa can pick up the story.
If I make it through this without tears, that will be a miracle. That was a Friday, like he mentioned. He was told on Thursday, Father Andrew was, and we received the dreaded late May, late April, I guess at this point, late April email saying like immediate parish staff meeting at 10 a.m. if you can make it this morning. And I said words I can't say on this podcast. Friday's my day off. So I was not even at St. Clair that day. I hadn't gone to Mass yet because I was intending to go to daily Mass at St. Francis of Assisi, which is in Oakville where my parents' house is. So I was going to go to their noon Mass and then head over to my parents'. So I was still around Chesterfield and saw this email come in and I'm like, Father Andrew is leaving. Father Andrew got reassigned. And so that's just like, okay, this is like, just like trying to praise the Lord in the midst of that and already thanking him for the gift that Father Andrew has been.
Thank you.
It did not hit me between the eyes in the same way that it hit Father between the eyes. I didn't know exactly what it was, but I would have put money on that. And so, he called us down to the basement of the rectory and we all were sort of dreading it. Like we all knew something was going to happen. And he didn't really mince words. It was just really quick. He said, it's me. And that was cutting. and I think for the first few minutes, I didn't quite understand, denial, some might say.
It was definitely denial on Alyssa's part.
I didn't speak really at all during the meeting.
Just fell into an abyss of melancholy. Never to be pulled out.
Perhaps, yeah. And so when he told us, he was not able to yet share with us who the incoming pastor would be because it hadn't yet been made public. So he told Father Andrew so that he might know who he's living with and who he's working with. But he wasn't able to tell us until the following day when he announced it to the parish at the 5 p.m. Saturday Mass. So there was a holy Saturday moment where you're just like,
the Lord is dead and is not yet resurrected.
Right. But what was beautiful about this, and looking back now, I can go for it.
Well, you also, after that meeting, people were like just dead spiritually. And so a few of us went to Topgolf.
Yeah.
Alyssa was not able to go. She still had to go to Mass.
And that's not why I wasn't able to go.
Well, for other reasons. And then I had asked you where you were going. You're like, I'm going to St. Francis for Mass. And I'm like, you know, miracle of miracles. The irony is so palpable. I said, I guarantee Father Yates is going to be celebrating Mass.
Yeah. So, yeah, so I got up from the meeting because I was about to lose it in the basement of the rectory. And so I left and got to Mass like 45 minutes early. and I said I was going to daily Mass. And as I was getting up, Father asked, you know, where are you going? And his face was so, you didn't reveal anything, you know, you didn't mm-hmm. let on that it was anything like that. So, and I was distraught. to say the least. And so the only thing that I knew to do when, yeah, at that Mass, I was going straight to Mass, which was a great gift, but I offered that Mass, that specific Mass, for Father Martin and for incoming pastor. And so, and that was sort of like a defeated surrender rather than like, yeah, something I felt that was necessary, but I was more so sad about it. But so I was a mess even during that Mass, and I sat way in the back hoping that no one would see me there. And mm-hmm. sure enough, Father Anthony Yates had that Mass at St. Francis of Assisi. So it was just hindsight. It was really beautiful to just see the way that the Lord's hand was present in my own sort of grief. But yeah, we're still working through things. So
sure.
Yeah, that's Friday for me. The reason Friday. I couldn't go to Topgolf was because I couldn't look at him. Like, I couldn't look at
Father. Oh, yeah, yeah. And then that weekend, he had to announce it because all the moves were being announced. So it was like a whirlwind. Like, Thursday, he told me. Friday, he told the staff. Saturday, he announced it to the parish. Mm-hmm. I'm like, goodness me. And he had to say it six times yeah. at all of our Masses. So that was tough.
Right.
So that was kind of a heavy time.
Sure.
And what I appreciated during all of that, There was the shock of people, you know, that so many people said like, wait, why is he lingering up there? Like, does he have an announcement? So there's the shock of what happened, but then just the faith of the people here, really encouraged me. It's like a lot of people said, well, we know that this has to happen. We don't mm-hmm. like, we're not in love, but with this happening, but you know, in so many words, they're saying, well, we don't follow any pastor. We follow the Lord.
Right.
You know, it's like, hopefully we follow the good shepherd and not just the shepherd that's here, you know? Yeah. So I was encouraged by that and by the faith and trust of the people at St. Clair. I mm-hmm. was, yeah, I thought that was really great.
Sure.
Mature.
Yeah, totally. And I will say too, I think, and I'm not 100% healed yet, but I think the reason it was so distressing for me, Father Martin has become not only a boss, but sort of like a very dear spiritual father as well. And he was the one who hired me. And it was that interview that sort of allowed me to say goodbye to the career that I had been planning on and enter into ministry. So, yeah, that was just really dear. And his mission is what I bought into here. And so there was a lot of fear and feelings of betrayal, like the words that I said to the Lord that day were not good, but it was authentic prayer. So yeah, it was hard, but, I will say there were sort of three names that I had in my head, of guesses as to who I thought the new pastor might be. And Father Yates was the third one, but he was also the one that I was hoping for.
Nice.
So yeah, there was a lot of, just to reassure everyone, like, yeah, the grief had nothing to do with who the new pastor was. It was only in saying goodbye to Father Martin. And mm-hmm. when he announced that to the parish, there was just a wave of peace that kind of flooded through me. So I hope others experience that as well if they know him.
Yeah.
So.
But the phoenix rises. So after that same week, it was really like a whirlwind. Father Martin announces he's leaving. Then Deacon Charlie gets ordained a priest that Saturday, mm-hmm. which was an awesome day. He and five other guys got ordained priests for the Archdiocese of St. Louis. Alyssa brought a little cohort of folks from the youth group.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah. Beautiful Mass. And we had, oh, we went to Father Charlie's celebration that night, reception. Mm-hmm. Which was fun when Alyssa learned that we're going to have a seminarian living with us this whole year.
Yeah. Father Andrew, he also was asked by Father Charlie now to give a little exhortation speech.
I didn't really know.
Toast at his ordination reception, which is really beautiful. I didn't know you're getting up there. I'm like, why is he wearing his fancy cassock? Why is he wearing the little, fascia?
Yeah. I never wear my fascia.
The belt thing. And then he stands up and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. That was special.
Yeah.
So I got to say a few words kind of on behalf of the priest of the archdiocese, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, Father Martin actually preached Father Charlie's first mass, which is an honor that a newly ordained priest typically bestows on another priest whom he looks up to, whom he admires. So I thought it was a real feather in Father Martin's cap to be selected to do that. Because your first mass that you celebrate as a priest, you're focused on kind of what's most essential about the mass, which is the Eucharist, and like that's what you've been working towards. At this point, Father Charlie, you've all heard him preach. So he's not super excited about preaching. He's excited about celebrating the Eucharist. So most guys ask another priest to preach their first mass. So were you there for that?
I was there, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even hear. Oh, well, Father Martin had told me what he was going to preach about, but I can't really remember. It was about how the new evangelization needs to be spread with new ardor, new something, new...
Blah. Tried and true. Methods, ardor.
Threefold.
Yeah.
Three things. And so anyway, Father Charlie has since moved on from us to go to St. Peter's in Kirkwood. And he's still soliciting Alyssa's wisdom as he's trying to hire a youth minister at St. Peter's in Kirkwood.
That's right. So if you are keeping track, this is May. What day is that? May
29th.
May 29th. And it's been two... priests have left our lives.
Yeah, how about that?
Racking them up.
So that was, yeah, that was a great week. Right after that, this happens every year. This is not just like parish things. This is also like me things / Alyssa things / youth group / whatever. Like big things that have happened. I think one thing that was cool is that the week after ordinations at the seminary, they always do a week of, I don't even know what you call it. It's a camp. Yeah. It's a camp. It's where it's called Kenrick Glennon Days, KGD for short. And they're high school, I guess, sophomores, juniors, and seniors who run the thing. So they show up there a day before the campers. And then those high schoolers are there all week for 1 week. And then there's campers who show up. I think it's fifth and sixth. Going into sixth grade and going into seventh grade, and then going into eighth grade and going into ninth grade. Two separate camps. And they're there for, you know, like 2 nights, 3 days total, whatever. And the high schoolers put on the camp. So we had a number of boys here from St. Clair who went and attended Kenner Glenn Days and helped out. And they're like local celebrities amongst the seminarians.
So, yeah, to clarify, we had teenagers be junior counselors. So yeah. I don't know that we had any campers go, but
we had one.
Oh, we did? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. But we had some of the high school boys that are involved in youth ministry. They were help facilitating the camps, which is where the affinity with the seminarians comes in.
It's literally the most fun. It's like the most fun camp ever. So I was there a couple of the days because I was in charge of, as a young priest, you know, got a lot of energy, not that bitter. And they asked me to go and do a little session, 45-minute session called Grilling and Grace, which I think I did 10 times total. Okay. So we taught the children how to grill and also what the heck grace is, which is actually two things that I really enjoy. So we made chicken and hamburgers with them. And we told them about grace. And actually, it's fitting that we even talk about this on this day because today's St. Lawrence's feast day. And we brought up how St. Lawrence is the patron saint of grilling because he was...
grilled.
He was grilled.
And may he rest in peace.
Yeah, so there was like... that was a crazy time. It was me and Father Clark Phillip, who's one of my good buddies, and Father George Staley. And we were like... it's partially like everything we said was true, but we were just making up a lot of things too. But we had a lot of fun with the kids. So that was awesome as well. And I know a lot of the teen boys who were there really appreciated being there. and got to talk with the vocations director and things like that, guys here who are open to discerning the Lord calling them to priesthood.
Yeah, it's gotten to the point, we had an altar call that was just like a little vocations one night event after Steubenville just recently, and some of the guys and girls from youth ministry came, and Father Yates was there, and myself and another core member, so just a small group from St. Clair. And when we kind of filled into our seats, one of the seminarians, college seminarians, said kind of to himself, but I was standing right next to him, he said, "Oh, there's our St. Clair boys. There's my St. Clair boys." And I turned to him and I gave him this look and I said, "Those are my St. Clair boys." But I said, "Don't worry, you can have them in 2 years."
That's awesome.
So yeah, it's a delight to see that they are forming relationships with, yeah, not even if they enter the seminary, but just holy young men who are pursuing virtue.
So. Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
Fun times.
It was fun times. What is next on my list? Oh, discipleship groups. You talk about that? We kind of fired that up this summer.
Sure. So this was sort of a, I don't even know, I think out of coming out of COVID last spring, last December, I was just, yeah, our nights had gotten kind of boring, and we just needed like a reset and a kickstart. And I was like, we have to re-envision what we're doing with youth ministry here at the parish. Otherwise teens will continue to like be ground down by media and Zoom and all these things. So how do we do that? And yeah, we started dreaming up what it looks like to move to a small group model for our Wednesday night events for youth ministry. So long story short, these groups form that we've been calling discipleship groups, that have become and were intended to become a place for students who are wishing to go deeper and learn a little bit more about the faith and not necessarily just come for the social aspect, which is awesome, but to go a little bit deeper and be formed in the gospel and be formed in small group type structures and deeper content. So for about 10 weeks during Lent, I met weekly with my core team, which was like hindsight, just a godsend that they were even willing and on board for that, because that's a big commitment for people who aren't paid volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
But formed them, the core team first, each week with a little session on different topics of being in relationship, receiving your identity, what it means to be called to mission personally and within the realm of the mission of the church. And deeper topics that we would go into with the teens, whether that's scripture or chastity or how to lead a small group, just some of the practicals. So after those 10 weeks were up, we launched those at, I think after a little bit after Luke 18. And we have 37 teens that are a part of a small group. I know for my girls, I'm leading a freshman girls group with another core member. We haven't had every person that's in our group come to every session just because schedules and things. Mm-hmm. But and thanks be to God, Father Andrew agreed to lead one of the upperclassmen boys. And so, yeah, what has your experience been with that?
Yeah, altogether positive. Those guys are, many of them are already very close friends, so it works out well that way, and they already trust each other and want to spend time with each other. So my group was probably the easiest of all groups, honestly. Yeah. At the same time, and this is like something that kind of goes to what the saints have said, a lot of these guys, like, I think will remain Catholic probably for the rest of their lives. Like, I think they're on a certain trajectory that way. But the saints always talk about, like, the first conversion is like, it's a lot of like what God does. Like, when somebody actually starts believing in Jesus, it's something that God primarily does, and somebody, you kind of wake up to it, right? It's like, oh wow, here I am. Like, wow, I actually do believe this. I get it. But then there's the second conversion that requires a lot of our cooperation and obedience. And I think for some of those guys, it's that. It's like there's cooperation and obedience that is still required, and cooperation with what God is doing. So one thing that one of the sessions that Alyssa had drawn up was excellence versus mediocrity, which is something I think especially men should and can return to all the time.
Mm.
And I see in them that they want to strive for more. But I also see how just the society around them says, you don't need to try hard. Like, you can be lazy. Like, you don't, it's okay. Like, you're better than other people are. So, like, you're not committing these big sins. So, you shouldn't have to strive. And it's like, look, you know, like, we got to work hard. If we're going to get to heaven, you know, I've got to strive. And so I think about that a lot. I think a lot of our conversations kind of return to that, depending on whatever we were talking about. It's like, do we want to be excellent or do we want to be mediocre? And it's easy, you know, I think people get offended by that sort of language because you cast a judgment. But I'm the first one to cast a judgment on myself that I behave with mediocrity regularly, you know, because being excellent is difficult, you know. So I think, yeah, most people are mediocre, you know, like I'm willing to say that.
Yeah. And I think going off of that, I've been thinking about this recently, that excellence is sort of a virtue in the sense that it's not something that is just for exterior show, but it's like in my disposition towards my own life, in the privacy of my own, like, striving for holiness. Am I striving for excellence when I get up in the morning and decide whether or not I should make my bed? Mm-hmm. Am I striving for excellence when, even small things like, do I clean out my car or no? You know, like, it's not, and that's, yeah.
It's like, do you excel your disposition to whatever?
What is ordered?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's like, you need to excel, like, overcome things mm-hmm. that are difficult. Are you that sort of person mm-hmm. that is excellent? You know, you excel. And
the boys want hard. That too.
They do. Yeah, they do. That's why the groups is so important, because they can share the things that they're doing with humility, honestly, and say, like, I'm doing this. And then a week later, one of the guys will say to me, like, I'm really impressed by so-and-so. It's like, oh, cool. Now you have a model to follow,
yeah. You
know? So things like that are really helpful. It's a season. Like, discipleship groups couldn't last all year long.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's been a great little primer to whatever we might do in the fall and
kind
of hop back in if we need to.
Right. Yeah. So logistically, it's difficult for the core team to lead each week once school starts back up and they get more into their jobs. But I think it was a good trial for the summer just to see where what's possible with taking teenagers deeper, you know?
Yeah. Moving right along.
What's next?
The one you weren't even there for, it, I don't think, the Corpus Christi procession,
which
I basically organized and kind of mapped out and everything like that. I am, you hear that?
Yeah, what is that?
I just turned my phone on airplane mode, so it might be your phone.
Okay.
Maybe it was my phone.
I don't think that's how science works, but.
It's science. I think that is. It's like the.
The crackle?
Yeah, yeah. Like one of us was receiving.
I'm always trying to receive, Father.
Okay. Jesus juke. I am firmly of the belief that religion should stand out from the rest of the world, because, like, you don't come to Mass. People shouldn't come to Mass, I don't think, to be entertained. You know, like, you shouldn't come to Mass and experience something that you could experience in your living room. Like, I think it should feel different than most of the things you experience in your life. And when was the last time you went on a procession, like, following someone that you adore and believe in? And that was, like, super cool. Like, the first time we ever done a Corpus Christi procession, and we only, like, announced it maybe 2 weeks before we did it, but... Yeah, it was like almost 200 people who were part.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. We didn't do a great job at organizing the music, and that's definitely not Shen's fault. It's totally my fault. If you're going to do it, normally you would sing the entire procession, mm-hmm. but you need strong voices and many voices to be able to do that. But honestly, people were so good. You know, they continue to sing throughout.
What was being sung?
Let's see. Jesus, my Lord, my God, my all. That one. Sweet Sacrament. Is that the same song? Sweet Sacrament, we thee adore. Panis Angelicus, naturally. And I can't remember all the other songs.
Hmm.
There's 7 or 8 different songs that I had put together. Anyway, went down to Cherry Hill. to a gentleman, his wife's house, and we put the Lord on the altar, the makeshift altar there. What are you laughing?
Nothing. Go on.
And then we went down to the Passionists. So, like, we were on Clayton Road for a good, whatever, half a mile.
It's a busy road.
Busy road. Lots people of eyes see Jesus. Being confused. A lot of people were waving. A lot of people liked it. Okay. You know, a lot of people confused.
Palm fronds.
A little bit of everything. But we had a lot of children participate too in the procession, which I love. So it was good. And then that was yet another opportunity for me to be with some of our high school guys who, honestly, this summer and since Easter have been so helpful in since Christmas before, high school guys have been helping me serve for some of these bigger liturgies, and they do great at it. So Corpus Christi was an awesome time, and I think we'll definitely do it again next year. So look forward to that.
Praise.
Summer PSR was a big deal. I had not yet participated in a summer PSR because it happened after I had arrived 2 years ago. Speaking of which, I arrived on July 31st 2 years ago. So,
is that 2 years?
It's been 2 years.
What a gift.
Awesome. And so I got to experience summer PSR. I was pretty much there every day teaching or visiting the classrooms. PSR, it's its own beast, folks. Really, it really is. We need to educate the kids who go to public school. It's just a matter of like, what's the best way to do it? So most places just have normal PSR, which happens once a week during the school year at like 6 p.m. normally for about an hour. And here at St. Clair, we do that, but we also have this summer PSR program, which is kind of like a camp where you're here for 5 or 6 hours a day for 2 weeks. And it's more intensive. But then during the school year, you really don't do anything at all. And so it's like, well, all I know is I desire more all around. Like, it's not perfect. Nothing is perfect. I thought the kids during summer PSR were super engaged, though, and that they enjoyed themselves. And the catechists really came out and were energized and fun, and they were patient with the kids. And I thought it was a raging success.
It sort of has the feel of like a vacation Bible school or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my fear is that those 2 weeks are the most that they will get throughout the year of religion. So then I think maybe 4 times during the year we have them come back on a Sunday and we do like little recaps and things like that. But man, like the faith is something you got to be living every day. And so to do it 2 weeks is awesome, but what are the ways that we can continue to imbibe this to our children? And this is where it really becomes like parents have to be the primary educators in the faith. Like, you can't just drop your kids off at PSR or even at school here and say, there you go, kids, go learn Catholicism. It's like, okay, well, anything that we could teach the children here could potentially be undone at home. Not like actively working against it, but just by omission, you know, like you're just not reinforcing it. And that's kind of the slow slide into, I don't know, secularism.
Yeah, truly.
So it's a challenge. It's an opportunity, but it's also a challenge.
Yeah. This coming here, working at St. Clair is the first time I've ever heard of a summer PSR program. And so I was even confused by the concept of it to begin with, but Sheila and Brenda do an incredible job facilitating it, and they're incredibly organized and supportive of the catechists. So,
yeah. At one point, I was teaching the 5th grade. Did I tell you this? Sean was their catechist, and so was Michelle. And I was teaching the 5th grade, and they had all these questions for me that they had been building up like all week long. And one of the girls raised her hand and says, "Father, is that your real hair?" I said, "What do you mean? Is that my real hair?" She's like, is that your hair? I go over and I put my head in her face and go, "Feel it! Feel it!" And she goes, no, is that like the real color of your hair? I'm like, yes, I don't dye my hair. This is the real color of my hair.
I don't understand. Did she think it looked unnatural? You got frosted tips or something?
I guess so. too blonde for my own good.
I mean, I think it is a trend now for guys, young guys, to go blonde. So.
Okay. Really?
Yeah, you're just a trendsetter. You're an influencer.
So that was like really funny. And she's always, now this young girl, she's always embarrassed when she's around me.
Well, yeah, you made her touch your hair.
She actually didn't even touch it. She wished she wouldn't feel it. I'm like, fine. You don't have to.
You can rip the toupee off.
So I had so much fun teaching all those classes. Yeah, but a lot of those, just like to be totally honest, a lot of those kids don't come to Sunday Mass. So I will not see them for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so like I work really hard that week to try and remember names. But if I don't see you for six until Christmas, it's going to be really hard. So It's sad for me. Like I love working with young people. I think there's heaps of opportunity. The parents really seem to love it, but it's just hard, you know.
Certainly room to dream there.
Room to dream. So then this summer, Father Martin was gone for 2 weeks, which left me by myself. Father Charlie was around to help out a little bit. Father Martin went somewhere in Florida. And
he was doing the priest retreat at White House.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, okay. So, he was gone. And everybody had to die in those 2 weeks. So I had many a funeral. Which is always a beautiful time, but
I was gonna say, are you complaining about your day to day?
No.
Yes.
No. But it was busy, certainly. And then Alyssa left for twice, Phoenix one time, vacation another.
Yes.
What was Phoenix?
Phoenix was the Catholic Youth Ministry Convention. It was actually Scottsdale. No, it was Phoenix. Yeah, so when Father Martin announced he was leaving, part of the grief process was also counting down the days that he had left at the parish, and then counting down also the days that, like, I would be there when he was there, which I think added up to, like, 7. Wow. So that was a sad time. But, when Catholic Youth Ministry Convention, this is it's a conference that Life Team puts on every summer for youth ministers. You can invite your core team. There are sometimes associate pastors or even pastors that will attend. And it's just for anyone involved in youth ministry in a parish setting to come and sort of be reinvigorated for the mission of youth ministry in the parish and the local diocese. But then also some like practical tools and trainings. So there's different tracks. You could do a beginner's track, and that's maybe for someone who is just getting into youth ministry or feeling... or their parishes maybe just got subscribed to Life Teen. And then they call it the veterans track. And that's for people who are looking for new and creative ways, not just the basics. So, I went, and a group of St. Louis youth ministers were also down there, and some priests from St. Louis as well, which is, if anything, it was a nice way to, kind of re-fall in love with what it is we're trying to do, at the parish level within the archdiocese. It was good for me professionally to see youth ministers for an extended period of time outside of just like meetings. Mm-hmm. It's all such that the things that we glean from that conference, we can bring back and implement at the parish. So, it was a little bit distracted for me because I had just come off of silent retreat. And previous to that, I had just grieved the loss of Father Martin. So it was like a kind of a whiplash thing to go from a lot of emotional surges to silence to a crazy conference. So, but it was a gift, really. I was saying afterwards that I wish Father Andrew could have come with us. And it's not that you couldn't have. I think we didn't sort of anticipate that would be necessary. Because you're already very familiar with youth ministry, but... perhaps in the following years. I don't know.
Yeah. CYMC. Oh, and Steubenville happened.
Steubenville was in, that was July. Yep.
Jumping forward. How was that?
You want to talk about Steubenville? Okay. Steubenville. Yeah, so Steubenville happened in July. It was a little bit crazy because the way the Office of Youth Ministry runs it is you register your parish as a whole, but then I personally need to register students to know what number of spots we need. And so St. Alban Rowe, their youth minister, their previous youth minister, had reached out to me asking if they could come with us under our name for whatever reason. I don't know the purpose there, but and I said, sure, like if you have teens coming, that's fine. So it was kind of a mix of St. Alban teens and St. Clair teens, and which was a good grab bag, and for them to get to know one another so close and like so geographically close. Mm-hmm. But the theme was restored. And so Steubenville, it's just, for those of you who don't know, a youth conference in Springfield, Missouri, on the campus of Missouri State. And yeah, it was just, we had speakers, yeah, good Catholic speakers come in. Father Martin was on the ministry team, so he had masses, and he celebrated masses with Bishop Rice and some of the other priests from around the Midwest, and mm-hmm. he gave some talks and everything, breakout sessions. So that was good for the teens to see him after he had already been moved on to his new assignment, to come back and see a sort of dad, as it were, yeah. again. Yeah. yeah, and Steubenville is always impressive. I mean, I'll leave it at this, but some of the boys that we've been speaking about that are sort of the pride and joy of my life, 2 years ago when they were incoming sophomores before COVID, they went on Steubenville, and it was sort of the first big faith event that they had attended. And after that, after they came home from that weekend, these group of guys sort of band together and said, we're going to get serious, and we're going to hold one another accountable, and we're going to go to bi-weekly confession with each other. And if you're not coming with us, you're going to tell us where you were. So it's just like hardcore things like that, that just invigorate the teens that want to send them out. So yeah, it was a good time.
That is good.
It's beautiful to see all the priest procession as well, just a witness to the beauty of the church in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So we jump forward there, but Father Martin did leave the parish. So that was a good celebration for him that day. Father Charlie and I celebrated most of the masses, and then Father Martin had just the noon mass and probably a 3-hour longer reception afterwards.
He was receiving people the whole time.
Yeah. Holy cow. Didn't stop. Mm-hmm. And he literally, I mean, like, he handed me his badge and his gun, and he walked out. I mean, so that, yeah, after that, he literally walked out and didn't come back. Yeah. Which is crazy. Took the business manager with him.
That's true. He, to be fair, though, they weren't told that they had to leave until Monday, and I think he wanted to give Father Yates some extra time to move things in. So he got out just that Sunday and sort of had that be the mic drop of his tenure here.
Mm-hmm.
3-year here.
Here. That's funny. So then Father Yates arrived, and that was a whole whirlwind, and it still has been because his rooms aren't yet completely ready. So he's kind of been living out of boxes for a little bit. So God bless him. He's got a lot of energy. He sees a lot of opportunities, just trying to get caught up in so much stuff. So pray for Father Yates as he continues to grow into his role as our pastor here at St. Clair. I'm speaking for him and speaking out of turn potentially, but he loves the people here. He loves the community. He sees all the energy and, I think everybody's received him super well. And I don't think there's any need to compare anybody to like the former pastor. Like, they're different people. They're different people, and there's no reason to stack up a scoreboard or anything like that. So just like, people have received Father Yates with openness, and I think that's great posture. So
I will say, to second that, the reason that I believe there was a lot of peace when he was announced as the new pastor is because I knew that he was a priest who prays. And Father Martin certainly was that as well. But I'm saying, it's if he's praying, if he's seeking the Lord's will, like, we can trust him to a certain extent, which was a great, there's just great solace there. Yeah. So he's pursuing holiness, which I'm grateful for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of holy things, Alyssa and I made a pilgrimage two, Six Flags. Six Flags St. Louis with like 10 teens.
Yeah, maybe a few more.
Yeah. Alyssa, tell us all about it. It was both a beautiful and a painful and a confusing day. I think I finally felt I'm aging.
So that was the thing that took me most by surprise is Father Andrew hadn't been, he said, to Six Flags since he was coming into college seminary.
Yeah.
Which was 2012.
Yeah.
2013.
12.
I haven't been since last year, which I did not anticipate to age this quickly, but we took the took the sixth graders 2 years ago, our middle schoolers. So both of us, it's been a minute. And I've never had an issue with roller coasters. I don't do like the super spinny ones, you know, like the Scrambler or whatever, like, because I know myself, but I'd never had an issue with roller coasters. And we went to the Batman first, as one does, because that's where else would one go? And we got off, and I was like contemplating all of my life decisions up woozy. Until that point.
Woozy.
I was dizzy. I was like, I don't remember the last time I felt this way.
Yeah.
If I ever have, certainly never getting off a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And so the teens were like all amped and everything. And I'm like, I think I need a minute. Like, can we just pull over it really quick?
Yeah.
Not to mention there was a heat advisory that day. So
it was 98 degrees the entire day.
They said, I looked at the weather channel and it said, stay inside as much as you can. Don't be exposed to the sun. And I was like, how about we go to Six Flags? So yeah, that really caught me by surprise the first time. And I'm like, oh, it's going to wear off.
Yeah.
And it didn't. And so this is when I knew I was in for it, is we're just like sort of making our way downtown, trying to ease into some of these bigger roller coasters. And we go to the Mine Train because some of the high schoolers, this was their first time and they were a little bit nervous. So we were like, let's just do the Mine Train. It's easy, simple, baby roller coaster. While we're in line for the Mine Train, Father takes three teens like right across the little walkway to this thing called the Fireball.
That's right.
Which is pretty much just a circle.
Pretty much just a circle that you go around and around on. But sometimes not all the way around. You get suspended like midair. And it was awful. Because you're in a little box car, like in a little car, facing each other. There's one girl sitting next to me, and then across me is a dude, and across from the girl is a girl. So I'm like 3 feet from the face of a teenager. And I'm like, and we're like flying in midair. And I'm like,
were you facing one another?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, if I vomit, it's going to go right on him. And I'm like, I'm also scared of the thing and like what's happening. But it was awful. And yeah. I nearly lost my gum. As I recounted, I felt like a chameleon pulling it back in with my tongue. That's how I remember that event. But it was really spectacular. And I got off that and I said, oh my gosh, I really need a break. But then, you know, no rest for the weary. We go straight to the swings. And poor Alyssa has no friends and no one's on the swing with her. I said, hey, can I come with you? So then she and I are on the swings together and we're both like, this is not good.
And just the irony of the moment, like the Fireball thing is not an impressive looking ride. It's just legitimately a circle. It looks like something that would be set up at a school picnic, which is never good.
Yeah.
So he's coming from that. I'm coming from the Mine Train, which I'm fine after. And we're converging at the swings with the group. And I don't really ever do the swings again, spinny, but we went up there and...
But I also think, like, it's the swings. You're just going in one circular motion.
Right, I'm like,
this
is going to be a breezy time. And it was breezy. But we're going up and we're rising and immediately it starts to spin in a circle. And, just the juxtaposition of my interior disposition and his, as he expressed... But then, like, the gentle, soothing ride, well, it wasn't soothing, but the gentle, like, circular motion of the swings, like, it shouldn't have been this traumatic, but...
It was awful.
He's saying to me, as we're swinging next to each other, these parishioners are going to see me, Ralph. These parishioners are going to see me throw up. I'm literally going to throw up, and they're going to see it. And my eyes are closed the whole time because I'm trying not to look down and, like, reset my equilibrium, which is just isn't working. And I'm like, and truly saying, shut up, Father, shut up, Father. I'm trying to concentrate. So yeah, it was just humbling.
It was humbling. It was awful. I mean, I would rather take 4 shots of Fireball than go back on the Fireball. But
I don't know that I would rather do that.
I would.
So that's what I was feeling like.
We had a good time. I mean, you just have to embrace roller coasters differently. It was a lot of like clenching of my core, yeah. Really like trying to.
The teens.
And then the best moment was when Jack came on the Mr. Freeze with me and he didn't open his eyes once. And he was like cursing my name beside me as we're going on the Mr. Freeze, which is all of like 47 seconds.
Father was laughing the whole time, screeching like a banshee.
I haven't laughed that hard in a really long time.
Yeah, it was just funny. The teens loved it.
Yep.
It was just a sweaty time. It was fun. Lots of memories.
Sweaty time. We didn't even go to Hurricane Harbor. Although we did go on a Thunder River.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
I had to forego it. But.
Oh my gosh. I got soaked. And I realized that they have a bar there to put your feet on. And the reason why is because the basin where your feet go fills
wet.
With water.
Yeah.
Well, my feet were super soggy. After that ride.
Which is just what you want in 99 degrees.
Yeah. It was a good day. It was a good day through and through.
All right, what's next?
Since that time, 3 things. Father Seiler, Catechesis of the Good Shepherd, and Joe Martin.
Okay.
RIP, not actually, but one of my good buddies, Father Chris Seiler, 4 years ago when I was still in Rome. He arrived there to study for the diplomatic corps of the Vatican. So the Holy Father had asked him to be a diplomat for the Vatican. And he was there for 4 years studying and overlapped with me. We lived in different places, but we saw each other enough. And he finally got his assignment this summer, which is Angola, a country on the western side of Africa, surrounded by the Democratic Republic of Congo and Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
Alyssa knows Africa. She's been there.
I've been there.
And anyway, I just mentioned it. It was actually in the review last week. I think they did a little article on him. And yeah, I'm going to miss him a lot. He'll get vacation. I think the Vatican has 3 tiers of countries. First tier, first world. Second tier, whatever. Third tier, kind of like banana republics, honestly. I mean, Angola.
We call them in the geography world LDCs. They're lesser developed countries.
Yeah. This Angola, I mean, it's somewhat developed insofar as there's a booming like oil economy.
But it is not Western. Like, it
no,
is not.
No, definitely not. Western. So he gets time off based on what kind of country he's assigned to. So he gets actually a lot of time off. So he'll be hopefully. I don't know when he'll come back to America, but yeah, it's not right now. It's not particularly safe in the capital city of Luanda because people are so desperate that they're like robbing people on the streets, especially because of COVID. So it's not safe for him to be out unless it's like a security event. But anyway, I'm going to miss him a lot.
That's an exciting sort of thing. When you think about becoming a priest, I'm sure that's not really like an option that you foresee.
Definitely not.
You know, and yeah, so it's just not. Like, the ways that the Lord.
Yeah, because the Vatican is not only just like the headquarters of the church, it's also its own
sovereign state,
and it has diplomatic relations with 183 different countries, and therefore you need ambassadors, and he's the secretary to an ambassador who's an Italian archbishop. Mm-hmm. And so he works side by side with the ambassador. In their world, they call him a nuncio. So they make sure that relations between the state are amenable towards Catholics. The number one goal is to make sure that Catholics can worship in whatever country they're in.
So very necessary, especially in LDCs.
And unfortunately, the Vatican doesn't have relations with a lot of Muslim countries because they're not open to having Catholics worship in those countries. Sure. So. Angola is not particularly Muslim really at all. It's mostly Christian, colonized by the Portuguese. Hmm. Anywhoozle, 2 last things. One thing I'm excited about, we may have to do a podcast about it one day, but here in the fall at St. Clair of Assisi Catholic School. We're beginning Catechesis of the Good Shepherd, which is a Montessori-based catechetical formation for little children. So we're beginning with four-year-olds and pre-K fours, junior kindergartners, and kindergartners this year. And we have a whole room dedicated to them in the catechesis lingo. It's called an atrium, which is taken from the Roman term from, like, before you would enter into a big basilica, the area outside where they would catechesis would normally happen for people who are not yet Catholic. That area is called the atrium. So these children are brought into the atrium to be able to learn the faith. And it's kind of like, it's a pray as you play almost type of thing. Like the children think they're just kind of playing with these little instruments, mass kits, vestments, statues, all these things. But like it's facilitating an encounter with God in the midst of the play, which I think is super cool. So I'm hoping to see the fruits of that, I think, honestly, pretty soon, as soon as it kicks up. But the atrium looks awesome, and I'm super excited for the women who are helping out with it, and just love the cooperation of the school here, and look forward to seeing how that goes. Yeah. You ought to go in there today, actually. It looks a lot different.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah. Go check it out. Yeah. And then finally, this weekend, our seminarian for the year arrived, Joe Martin, and we're thrilled to have him homeschooled K through 12. As Alyssa says, extremely normal, dangerously normal.
Joe, you are delightfully normal for dangerously someone who's been normal. Homeschooled.
Delightfully normal. And I think Joe and I are the same age.
27, he said.
Yep. So then it's going to be awesome to work with him. He's super competent, very faithful, prayerful, and he's excited to throw himself into what's going on here.
Yeah. Just to share some of his words without his permission. When we were getting, our core team goes out on Sunday nights, usually after we put on the life nights, and I walked into Circle 7 where the core team was sitting, and he said, someone had asked him about how Sunday night went and just being at the parish so far for the first couple days, and he said, I'm just overwhelmed with gratitude to be here. So that's your seminary, and that's who you're getting this year.
Yeah. We're grateful to have him.
Yeah, I can't wait.
So that's all I have, folks. School starts next week, Tuesday, which is super crazy to think about. I'll be teaching the 8th graders again on Fridays. But yeah, it's been a good summer and many good things to come in the fall. But we just thought we'd share a little bit about what was happening here.
That's right. You're all caught up to speed.
You're all caught up to speed. Pretty much everything that we just said fires me up. So... Yeah, and I think there's just a lot of opportunity to come on the horizon. So I'm generally, right now, optimistic and have a lot of hope about what's coming in the future. So happy to share with all of you.
Amen.
We'll see you next time. Oh, we'll have to introduce Joe eventually.
Yes.
So you'll get to hear more about his life as well.
Yep.
And hopefully Shana doesn't get chosen for jury duty.
Please, God.
All right, see you next time.
Bye.